Run away real fast, and I know who you are.
I understand it's really my fault, because I said that's what I would be doing. But I just realized that before I really introduce, you know, what I want to do, you guys don't want to have what I'm going to try to really accomplish. So I just want to introduce a little bit what I want to do, just because our yeshiva education does not prepare us in any way for meditation. I don't meditate in high school. Yeah. Say it. Say it.
No.
We're not
meditating.
I meditated once.
Okay, Robert, let's begin. By the way, anything you say will be heard by the way you have said.
This is why you careful what you say.
I'm going to try to get a scholarship to IU, so make sure you ask very intelligent questions. Okay, Robert, before I introduce that, I want to introduce a much more basic point that we're going to discuss at a later time. And it's the following. It's a point that the Piasetzner Rebbe, thank you, makes a number of different places in Tzav Zeros. It makes the following point. I'm not going to read it inside right now, because it's not a point that I want to focus on, but he makes the following observation, which is really relevant to our Avodas Hashem in many different ways. And he says the following. A human being is endowed with very different kochos, with various different ritzonos, various different drives, different types of emotions. And a human being has the need to actualize and engage in various different drives and emotions. It is a human need. A person needs to cry. A person needs to be angry. A person needs to be sad, needs to be excited. It's part of what a human being is. And it's an incredible thing. You have a whole genre of horror movies. Now, if you think about it for a second, what's a horror movie? Horror movies, they're just scary. Now, and it has all these like monsters running around tearing off people's heads. Now, why would a person want that? It's scary. Like, scary is like, you don't want to be scared, right? The answer is no, you do want to be scared. Why? Because a human being has a need to be scared. And a person has a need to be happy. And a person has a need to be sad. That's why people read these like novels where people die and people break their hearts. And why do you want to cry? You know this movie, you're going to cry in the end. Why do you want to do that? The answer is because people need to cry. So says the Piasetzner Rebbe, people have a need to express and engage in various different human emotions. Now, says the Piasetzner Rebbe, a person has three choices. Choice number one, which is the best choice, and that is a person should engage in all those emotions through Avodas Hashem and Torah. So there's a time to be very happy, and there's a time to be very, very sad. There's a time to be excited, and there's a time to be somber. So Yahadus, theoretically speaking, offers us all kinds of different opportunities to express our emotions. The Sefer Kuzari says, you know, Jews are very violent people. They're very violent. We have lots of violence, so how do we express? We have to express it out. We can't bottle up. So he says, chavrusas. You know, you yell to your chavrusa, you're about to punch him out. Yeah, that's a good, constructive way to express your violence. See, guys here don't appreciate it, because the base medrash here, guys are so nice, they're way too nice. Now, I went to this, when I was learning my inner Israel with this Baal Tshuva Yeshiva, with it, like these guys who were like 28 years old, who did the Israeli army, were like elite commando units, and like they went to India, and like, worshipped, you know, Buddha and whatever other three-headed snakes, whatever they worship over there. And like they went through everything, and they met up with the Breslov over there or whoever else they met up with, and now they were learning about the violence yeshiva. These guys were passionate about learning. So like, you know, he said, I came in yesterday, I came out of a public school. And in the public school you went to the library. And the moment you said anything like more than a whisper, you know that lady in the library, every librarian's basically like looks the same, like the cookie cut and like that short lady with the glasses. You know? That library, like every school I went to had that like lady. I think they're like triplets. So but this is like that's kind of just like carbon copy of this lady. And like, you know, you say something and she's like, shh. Like she's disturbing everyone much more than I with my whispering. Shh. You know, so I'm used to that. So I come to the base measures, and people are screaming and yelling, like, what happened? I was like waiting for the library. No, but she never showed up anywhere. So And I'm sitting there, you know, I open up the Talmud. I really didn't learn the Talmud so much. Like, I open it up, and I'm trying to learn. All of a sudden, there's a guy, like, to the side of me. He says, Tiger, 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 Tiger! What happened? Like, what happened? His chavrusa battled for, like, a minute, and this guy, like, jumped on him. Like, that was the environment. These guys, like, really violent. They're, like, you know, they haven't like, done any elite kind of combat unit stuff in, like, a few years. They need to get the energy out. So there has to be a way to channel all our kochos in a positive way. So it says to be assessed, and ideally, somehow, in a positive manner, through various different institutions of Yahadus, a person is able to express every single koch of excitement, of sadness, of anger, and all kinds of different things. Then, there's another way, and that is if a person can't find a positive way of engaging in very different emotions, a person can do it not in a positive way. So for every single positive way to express emotions, there's a negative way to express emotions. So I saw someone say that that's exactly the Nakuda in Gemara in Maseches Chule. It says for everything that's osir, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made something mutter. For every single food that was osir, HaKadosh made a food that tastes very similar to it. For every action that's osir, HaKadosh made some action that's similar to it, that's mutter. What's the point? The point is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a certain teva, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us an opportunity to somehow express all the kochos, express all the taivas, express everything in a possible, in a kosher way. So a person has an opportunity to express things with kedusha, or a person has an opportunity to express things with tumah, or a person has an opportunity to become psychologically dysfunctional by frustrating his kochos. If a person has a need to be sad and frustrates that, then a person becomes psychologically imbalanced. There was once a guy I was close to. He had a horrible family situation. I mean, we're talking about real bad. I mean, like, his father would, like, lock him in a washing machine and, like, hang him upside down in the closet. I mean, like, we're talking about, like, madrigos of dysfunction. And that's kind of like how he grew up. So I asked him, he says, I never cry. And this is like part of the dysfunction. It's not normal that a person never cries. Like, he kind of said to himself, you know, I live in Gehenna, so, like, I'm not going to fall apart. And that was like a shit. That was like a very unhealthy way, but, like, he saw that as his survival skills. But that's not normal. It doesn't make a person psychologically balanced. So says a person has three opportunities, three ways. He can either express things with kedusha, express feelings with tuma, or frustrate himself and become not balanced. There's no other way. You see, when someone says, stop watching TV, stop watching movies, stop listening to music, stop, it doesn't work. So someone to ask you, you know what, I want to stop watching TV. You can't. You cannot stop watching TV. It's impossible. You cannot stop watching music. You cannot stop listening to Gershon. Impossible! Unless you put something else in its place. It is not possible to undo a habit unless you replace it with another habit. Because it's a void that there's no vacuum in nature. Vacuum needs to be filled up with something. So when you take something out and replace it with something, that works. You can't take it out and not replace it with something else. That's what the assessor is saying. When there's a need, it has to be filled with something. Now, that leads us to the nakuda that I'd like to focus on right now. Human beings have a need to engage their imagination. We like to imagine a reality that is beyond ours. That's why you have all the sci-fi. That's why you have all kinds of, fairy tales. That's why we have movies. Movies allow us to engage in a reality that is not ours, right? Now, you really want to be a superhero. You want to be really cool. You want girls to like you. And that may not happen in real life. So you watch James Bond. And for like an hour and a half, you are James Bond. And that beautiful girl really likes you. Well, she doesn't, but you pretend she likes you. It's kind of like, when a football team win and the guy says, we won, like you were there, we won. We are so much better than that. We worked real hard to get that championship. Like this guy was like, he and Kobe Bryant were working out over the summer, So, but it's, the demon is so powerful, you like identify with the team, you identify with that hero, you identify, because for a second, you are able to be that person that you always want to be, and you may not be. So it's a need that we have. It's impossible to stop. We all have a need to engage in dhimma. We cannot escape it as part of the human condition. Now the question now becomes how we do that. Again, the fact that we will do that is not a shy. A normal person has dhimmas. And actually dhimmas are very, very powerful and very important, as I will show shortly. The question now becomes how we want to use them. Are we going to use our dhimmas like during davening, you know, play that sports game in our... such a great game, especially when I think about during Mincha. There's no game, by the way, I'll tell you, from all the games that I've seen, no game is better than the game that you watch in your Dimyon while you're down in Mincha. Try it. No, don't try it. But trust me, you know that I replayed those Chicago Bulls, Lakers, you know, when Chicago won their first championship. That was an awesome game. That was such a great championship. And I've seen that game about 100 times. 20 times during Mincha, a few times during Maariv, because that's the best. That's how it is. That's who we are, unfortunately. So the person has an option. Do we engage in dimyon in a negative way, in whatever that means, and everyone knows what that means, or do we engage in dimyon in a positive way? Now the question now becomes, well, how do we engage in dimyon in a positive way? If in a negative way, we can give plenty of examples from today until tomorrow. But what's the positive way of using dimyon? Now, in order to understand that, I think we have to understand a problem. Judaism has a problem, or we have a problem with Judaism. See, there are two ways of relating to knowledge. You know, sometimes we can learn something. Let's say, I'm going to tell you the history of a certain Chinese dynasty. I tell you what year they live, and, you know, where, and, you know, tell you about the little geography, where, you know, where the kingdom was located, and the various different names, and so on and so forth. And you'll say, what is that doing in the Kabul? But as let's say I would tell you such a thing, great, and you all go home, maybe I'll even give you a little test, pass the test. But it really, the only way you relate to that information is purely intellectually. You don't feel anything about it. If I were to ask you, no, Mike, how do you feel about that? And Mike will say, I don't feel anything about it, it's just information. I take a test, and I get 5 on the AP, whatever, Chinese history test, that's it. But sometimes what happens is that beyond information, our relationship with the content is much more than intellectual. For example, let's take in a historical event, let's say the Depression, the Great Depression. So you read about the Great Depression and why it happened and all the consequences, social, political, economic, and it's all very nice. But what happens if you lived during the Great Depression? And you have to wonder, how in the world are you going to feed your son? I mean, your son comes to you, Dad, I need a piece of bread. You know the famous Great Depression, you know, picture of that mother sitting there with the two girls kind of buried in, you know, in her shawl. Didn't know where the food was going to come from. For that mother and for those kids, the Great Depression is not a page in a history book. It's an experience. Every time they remember, they shudder. It smells to it. And they smell, you know, all those people who, you know, waiting in line for food who hadn't showered for weeks. You know, they smell good that bread smells, and they remember that taste. You know, Dad hadn't eaten for 2 days, and they put that bread in their mouth. So good. For them, the Great Depression is real. It was real when it happened, and it was real when they think about it. But for us, just a page of the book. So that's a problem that we have with Judaism. Because a lot of Judaism that we experience is not really real for us. Because it's like, at most, it's like some kind of a history. Yeah, Har Sinai, great. Okay, Avraham Avinu, great. If I were to ask you, how do you feel about Avraham Avinu? I mean, who could answer that question? I mean, how do I feel about him? I mean, he's a guy. He's a great guy. Good guy. I would say they made him like a role model of mine. But there's no connection to real Avraham Avinu. There's no connection to Matan Torah. And there's no connection to Korban Habayis from both sides. That's why I find, and I think if you think about it and really honest with yourself, you know the most difficult holiday for us? The most difficult is Tisha B'Av. There's nothing harder than Tisha B'Av. Do you know why? Because there's a certain guilt that we have. Because bottom line is, we don't give a darn that Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Just let's be honest, okay? We don't care. Who cares? Don't really miss the Beis HaMikdash to wake up in the morning and say, you know what I'm missing right now? Oh man, I really want to bring a carbon right now. Oh man, I really, you know, that's what I mean. There's no Beis HaMikdash and like start bawling. Imagine your roommate wakes up in the morning and he's like sobbing uncontrollably. You say, what's wrong? And he says, the Beis HaMikdash is gone. And you'll think he's a total nut. Like, what's your problem? You know, the game is on today. What are we missing? So, bottom line is, a lot of Yahadus for us is just not real. It's completely two-dimensional stick figure Yahadus. We have no connections. We have no emotional connections. It could be why, that's why the Gemara says, you know, there used to be Megillas Tanis. There used to be a whole list of Tanios that there were certain days you couldn't have a Tanis on because of various different events that happened to the Jewish people. So they were Mabatal all that. And the Gemara says, why? The answer is because people didn't care. Whatever those events were, whatever it meant to people, people didn't care. A lot of the Yahadus that we have, we can go through, we just don't care. For death, how do you feel about Simchas Torah? I don't care. What about Purim? Get drunk, yay, great. What does that have to do with, by the way, the Chag? You get to get drunk, it's fun, and you get to, like, but the Bahamas, yay, the Bahamas. Good, so we like Purim. But, I mean, bottom line for us, Purim is no different than some frat party. So I get drunk at a frat party, so, okay, it's not nice for a boy to get drunk at a frat party, so Purim is like basically a Jewish frat party. Great. Yom Kippur, that stinks. Yom Kippur is really bad. We don't like Yom Kippur. Because there's nothing fun with Yom Kippur. Okay, the other Chagim are pretty good. The food is great. And being outside in the sukkah has a certain charm to it. Also, good. What else do we have? Pesach, well, matzah stinks. Seder is way too long. The food is good. And the cups of wine are also okay. But bottom line is, if you think about, like, think about what is it that you like about Yahadus? And what is it you feel passionately about Yahadus? You know, do you get beyond, like, the food and the wine and too much more? And if the answer is no, and I think for many of us the answer is really no, the question is why? And I think part of the answer is that we were not there. And that's what, for us, Holocaust is, as emotional as we get, we don't get as emotional as people who were there, because they were there. But for us, it's not so real. And for our children in another 1,000 years, it's not real. They weren't there. But if in some way we're able to experience something, then it becomes more real. So the depression, it may be facts, and maybe we're not there. Let's say we see a movie, a great Oliver Stone movie called The Great Depression. And there's a whole characters over there, how they struggle, and we identify with them. And all of a sudden, our connection to the depression, the Great Depression, is not just intellectual. It's also over here. It's in the heart. So sometimes, you know, we're not able to go there, but we're able to see a movie or read a book, and then all of a sudden it becomes much more real to us. And you know, when we think about the Great Depression, we get choked up a little bit, you know, like a little bit. This is the problem, which is really a fundamental problem. And it's a problem of relevance. It's a problem of connection, of emotional connection, that all of us in this room, every single person in this room has. We have a hard time connecting to the Beis HaMikdash. We have a hard, by the way, you know, it's an interesting thing. We see in the Gemara is that when the Korban HaBayis happened, they wanted to, like, basically end life. They wanted to stop having children, they wanted to stop eating meat, and stop eating wine, drinking wine. Why? How come we don't feel like that? The answer is very partial. Because they watched the Beit HaMikdash burn, for heaven's sake. They saw the Kohanim jump from the roof of the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim whom they loved, the Kohanim who were their neighbors, who were their friends, who line up on the roof of the Beis HaMikdash and jump into the fire. Rabotai, I guarantee if we saw that, we would cry about the Beis HaMikdash also. But we're so far away. We're so far away. So that's a problem. Too much of our Judaism is way too theoretical, way too much in the past, and we feel way too little connection to anything that's really relevant to Yahadus. And it could be, by the way, kind of derech agav. That's why it's a Mishnah Psachim, that a person who during the Seder does not talk about Pesach Matzah Maror was not Yotze. So, you know, it's a fascinating thing. Everyone wants to know about this. If you're not, don't mention during Haggadah Pesach Matzah Maror, you're not Yotze. You're not Yotze what? When you're not Yotze. Yeah, Magid, the Mitzvah of Magid. So you think about it for a second. These three things. Well, are they really central to the story of Pesach? Let's think about matzah. Okay, matzah's kind of, you know, they ran out, they didn't have time to make bread, great. Pesach, Korban Pesach, okay, it's somewhat, you know, it's part of the story. Maror called us up here in Pesach, right? There's nothing, it's to remind us that life was bad. I would imagine that in order to be Yotze in the midst of Magid, you have to speak about the Makos, you speak about the Kriyas Yamsum. Why these three little things? It's seemingly completely unimportant things. And it could be one of the answers is because these three things are things that are tangible. You can say, matzah, you know this matzah over here? They ate a few thousand years ago. Imagine for a second, if I could bring you some book that Avraham Avinu wrote in his handwriting. That brings it a little closer to home. That makes that a little bit more tangible. Now this over here, this is a staff that Moshe Avinu used, you know, to do miracles. Oh, you know, like one time when I was in the sixth grade, I saw a picture of this. They brought in Michael Jordan's shoes, Michael Jordan's jersey. I didn't touch it. I never washed a hand again ever. I have a picture of Michael Jordan's shoes. I mean, he's got humongous feet. So I got those shoes, and they're like skis for me. Put them on, I got the jersey. And I went, yeah, we won! Yeah, we won all those championships. Me and Mike. You know, I gave him the LAU productive. Yeah. So, can you imagine, you know, Lahavdil? Now, this is right here, Avraham Avinu's staff over here. This is what you're thinking. Whoa, that makes it a little bit more real. That makes it a little bit, you know, closer to home. So you say, this matzah over here, that's the matzah that they ate. This carbon pesach, we don't have that anymore. This carbon pesach, this is what they ate over there. Maror, you know, it's some object that connects us. So, you know, was it Ricky Mann, right? He's got that thing around his neck. He's got his grandfather's tag from the war, right? It's a connection. This is what his grandfather wore in the war. He feels connected. So something physical to connect us to the past. But unfortunately, that's very little. We're not connected. And this is where this shiur that I would like to give next week comes in. Rav Dessler in Michtav Leah points out this problem. And he says that the answer to this problem is something called tziyurin. Tziyur literally means a picture, a drawing, a vision. And this is the duality that I mentioned earlier. Dimyon is a pain in the neck. It doesn't let us learn because we're thinking about some movie or something that happened to us. It doesn't let us doubt it. But the very same enemy that we have is also actually our friend. And the reason for this is because the dimyon is the key to the problem that I mentioned. Let me just give you some kind of like examples, you know, like not religious life, and I'm going to tell you about religious life as well. There's a book I mention all the time, 9 Habits of Highly Effective People. 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. So he speaks about imagination, and he points out that athletes, it's crucial for athletes to use their imagination, because before an athlete does anything, he plays it out in his mind. Now, when Kobe Bryant goes for a drive, in his mind already, he's worked out what is he going to do if the problem is I'm already, my players are getting a little dated, so it's a little hard to follow, but from the Celtics. No. Come on. Current.
Carnett.
Yeah, because he was in the market. Because he's been in the NBA for a million years. He went out of high school. So you know, he's figured, if Kevin Garnett like closed up the lane, I'm going to do this. And not only he thinks about it, he sees it. And if he doesn't go to the lane, I'm going to do that. So when athletes do something, they picture it in their mind first. Think about it. When you go for an interview, get interviewed with Rabbi Schneider, get into the yeshiva, you're like, okay, Rabbi Schneider is going to ask me like this. So I'm going to answer him like that. And if he answers me like this, and I'm going to say it like that. So what Dimyon allows us to do, if you think about it, it allows us to go to a place where we physically can't go. We're not able to go, you know, in a time machine to see what's going to happen and go back and relive the moment. We can't do that. But Dimyon allows us to some degree to do that. You know, the interview is going to happen in an hour. I can't, there's no time machine that I can take, but in my Dimyon I can. I picture the person in front of me, and I picture his questions, and I picture answering him. So our Dimyon allows us to go into the future. The Chazon Ish said an incredible thing. The Chazon Ish said, when I was a kid, I sat down and I pictured who I was going to become. I pictured it. I sat there and I envisioned who I was going to become in the end of my life. And everything that I pictured happened exactly the way I pictured it. Except for one thing. Said I didn't picture I was going to become famous. That was not part of my picture. But in terms of what I wanted to accomplish, I pictured it, and it happened. and I acted based on the vision that I imagined to myself. That's a concept of tsiyurin. Imagination allows us to take theory and make it very, very real. You're able to close your eyes and think to the future or to the past and picture and take the information, which is really just theoretical. Like you're going to interview Rabbi Schneider. You don't know who Rabbi Schneider is. You don't know anything about him. You don't know anything about the interview. It's just theory. You can close your eyes and you could put yourself right next to Rabbi Schneider. And you can see an interview. And you know what can happen if you're really good at it? You can feel the nervousness that you feel. You can feel, you know, the palpitation of the heart, you know. Ooh, you know, you could really get emotion into it, just like in a movie. When you're sitting in a movie, you're schwitzing. Oh my gosh, that guy's going to get killed. And you feel the whole audience go, they're living it. You know, if you hook up their brain to a machine, their brain is jumping up and down. They're, you know, they're completely. Your demiurge, your imagination is able to take you to places where you cannot go. If you know information about a certain city, you've never been there, it's just information, you close your eyes and you picture yourself going to that city and envisioning what that city looks like, that vision could be so powerful that it's kibayachol, you've been there. And just like a person who has visited, you know, some city and he has emotional connection, let's say, you know, you visited, you know, the Forbidden City and you were like, wow, this is incredible. And every time you think about the Forbidden City, you remember how it smells and you remember how it felt. If you sit there and through your dimion put yourself in the Forbidden City, you could have a very similar experience at the moment and your memories of it will be as if it happened to you. There's a great Doomsbury. You guys know Doomsbury? It's a comic. I don't think it's around anymore. Let's go around. So these two guys in Doomsbury sitting around and says, oh man. Woodstock. It says, Woodstock was great. You remember Woodstock? Oh, we're rolling in the mud, you know, celebrating the times of the greatest rocket bands. Now, wasn't it great? And the guy's like, Bob, we were never Woodstock. No? But I remember it so vividly. Like, it was such a powerful experience. He had such a dimion, like he thought he was there. He was never there. But sometimes dimion makes it mamish as real. You know, sometimes ever someone told you a story about something that happened, and he's told it so graphically, and at some later point you think it, you actually feel like actually happened. It's an incredible thing. Dimion makes things very, very real. As Sforner writes, so that was the whole point of Kabbalah. Imagine for a second a guy does an Aveira, and the Rebbe says, you know, you shouldn't have done that Aveira. You know, there's punishment for that. You know, God could punish you for that. Whatever. We come to the Beis HaMikdash. The Kohen says, you see that animal there? Yeah, I see it. He pulls out a huge knife. The blood dripping down. And I thought, whoa, that guy means business. He said, see that animal kicking around in blood? That could happen to you. Yeah, okay, I'll be more careful with Shabbos, okay? Maseder. I got this, like, you know, what they do with, like, people who, like, drive, you know, and, you know, they drive poorly and they get all these tickets. They send them, like, make them watch all these horror movies about, like, all these car accidents and things like that. And I was like, okay, you say, I'll be back because it's real. It's not just some theoretical car accident. You see the guy, you know, spread out, you know, dead, on the ground because of some drunk driver. It makes it very, very real. It's not a joke anymore. It's not some theoretical, you know, stick Bob. There's a real guy over here. So, says this morning, that's the only thing with Carbonus. You know, you get into all the details, like this and that and the other. When you walk out, you're like, okay, this is free. Okay, and it really is, that graphic view makes you realize you know, you need to shape up a little bit. When you have that vision, and it makes an imprint on you, whether you experience it directly or where you see it in your dimion, it's very, very powerful. If the Assessment Rebbe says like this, also in South of Zeros, he says, let's say you try to make yourself better. You tried it all. You tried this. You tried that. Cheshbon ha-nefesh, this, that, nothing. Nothing works. Nothing works. You're about to give up hope. He says, don't worry. There's one more trick up my sleeve, he says. And you're like, okay, great. What is it? So he says, I'll tell you what that means. Imagine for a second You enter Gan Eden. There you go. And you know who you see there? You see yourself. But not you like this, but the perfect you. That perfect slam dunk in vision. Perfect you. What would you look like? And if you really picture it, you know, very vividly, very clearly, the perfect you, the impact of that will be so great, and you will be so inspired that you can't imagine the change that it will have, that it will help you create. Now we'll say, that's not going to work for me, because we haven't learned to use our dimyo. But if we learn to how to properly use the dimyo, just imagine for a second, you walk in and you run into yourself. Imagine you're in a movie. And in the movie, you are the actor. You are the character. And you get to meet the perfect you. Think about the impact that would have. So you have to see yourself. Just like a basketball player has to see himself at the greatest of performances, the person has to see himself at the greatest of levels. Just two more points from the Piasecki, and then we'll finish here. The Piasecki has there's a paper that he has on the Haggadah. Someone else collected it from some of his other Sfarim. I think it comes from his Parsha Sefer. So he has like an interesting story when you flesh it out. Now again, for us, ETS Mitzrayim is, yeah, Jews were oppressed, and then they came out, and it was all gone. So Piasecki here, for pages upon pages upon pages, fleshes out, what would it feel like to find out that you're about to leave Mitzrayim? I don't know if you guys ever thought about that. So he draws a picture like he's a great writer. He says, a father, you know, he's running on the street, running. Trying to get home, runs home, says, guys, his family, we're out of here. And the family's like, what are you talking about? He says, guys, we're getting out right now, pack up. And the son is like, Dad, what are you talking about? We're not going anywhere. Do you remember my friend, just yesterday? You know, he was told by the Egyptian taskmaster to do something, and he didn't do just right, and the taskmaster took him with a rock and smashed his head. Do you remember that? Do you remember? And the Piasecki goes on and on and on and on, describing what the son says to his father. He said, that's not happening. It's not happening. Which reminds me, a great book all of you should read. Every person here should read a book by Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. Awesome book. Viktor Frankl was a Jew, not a religious Jew, who survived Auschwitz. So he describes what it felt like to be freed. I can't believe it. This Gehenna was his reality for years. And then he's free, and he doesn't believe it. He walks outside, he's not a religious person, falls down, humbly, he starts saying pillow. It's not real. It's not real. I heard from a Holocaust survivor, I dabbled him in Washington Heights, really an incredible person. He was a twin with his sister, and he was one of the Mengele kids that they did experiments on the kids. He was one of the twins. So he said when they were liberating Auschwitz, I don't know if he ended up in Auschwitz or at some point he was put into another camp, but basically the war was over. He's like 15 or 16 years old. So the war is over. Here the Allies bombing already. And the Nazis take all these Jews out to shoot them in the forest. Yeshua, the salvation is right here, minutes away. Now, who knows? But it's right there. The war is over. And these people are being led to be shot. And he describes to me in such graphic detail how they're being led and how he said it was so surreal. He said there were dozens and dozens and dozens of us. And they were like four Nazis. Like we could have run away. But we couldn't. Yeah. We had this sheep mentality. Four Nazis, we are a huge line, we could have ran. Nobody dared to think about it. So we're walking, and I'm hearing the bombing of Allies right there. I'm being led to shot. I suffered for all these years, and it's over. and I'm going to be killed right now. He says, he looks up to Shema and says, I don't know why I'm a Shemala. How is it possible? How's it possible? And all of a sudden he says, a bomb blows up very close to us. And the Nazis are like, whoa, what happened? And the Jeep pulls up, says, come, come, come. And like the four Nazis who are guarding us drive away. And here we are, finally free. We can't believe it. And nobody moves. We just stand there in the line. Nobody says anything. Nobody dares to walk out of the line. So that's how we're conditioned. So when you live that, that's very real. This is not some story about liberation of Auschwitz. He lived it. It's real. And I've heard the story. For me, it's real too, because I've played that story in my mind lots of times. It makes it very real. So that's what the assessor was trying to do. He's trying to say, guys, picture for a second how the Jews felt when it was time to leave. So when you're able to picture that, when you're sitting at home and you're saying the Haggadah, that's really powerful. When you describe the Kaiser as leaving, picture for a second. You see, the problem with numbers is no problem with saying that 6 million Jews were killed. 6 million Jews doesn't make a difference. It's such a big number. It's kind of like, you know, $50 billion that they were just lost right now. My daughter asked me, what's 50 billion? She's in the second grade. I said 50 billion. I mean, I wanted to make her feel just what 50 billion means. I said, imagine our building. We have a 5-story building. 2 5-story buildings connected. You know, every floor has 2 apartments. I said, imagine filling every single apartment with paper clips. All those paper clips will now be 50 billion. She said, wow, that's a lot. Okay, and that was the whole point of the movie paper clips, right? Because 6 million is not a number we can really have. So we read about Yetzias Mitzrayim and we say, Jews left. You know what problem with Jews left? Jews is just a group. It means nothing to us. But for 1 second, we would like know about one individual. One person. And what Gehenna this person went through with the Mitzrayim, for us it'd be a very different story. Because it's real, and it's something that we connect to. The P.S. Sutton Rebbe says, you know that why Shabbos before Tisha B'Av is called Shabbos Chazon? Because it's the fact that you read after Chazon. He says, because if you don't use that Shabbos to picture Chorban HaBayis, if you don't connect to it intellectually and emotionally, your Tisha B'Av will be a total waste of time. Because it'll be just an annoying day that you can't even learn Torah. How annoying is that? Did you have to sit there and, you know, read all kinds of weird keynotes that who understands keynotes? Who in the world understands keynotes? So you're reading boring stuff, it's a chag that's totally meaningless. You can't even eat. I mean, this Tisha B'Av is like the worst. Maybe Yom Kippur you understand a little bit, you know. But Tisha B'Av is, you know, nothing. Unless you have that chazon, unless you see that vision about Tisha B'Av, about Chorban HaBayis, very difficult to connect. What I'm going to try to do, Rabotai, next week, is I would like to show you that through Dimyon, we're able, it's not a chiddush, because, you know, intuitively you guys already know this, but I would like to show you how the Dimyon can be wielded and turned into a weapon, an ability for us to make Yahdus on a totally different level, to connect to it in a totally different way, and instead of having to engage our dimyon in some stupid place, lehefech, to use it for avodas Hashem in a way that's so incredibly transformative, in a way that's so completely different. I think many of us have never thought of it that way. So what I'm going to try to do is to take you to a place that's a real place, in a time and to an event that really happened, that I Baruch Hashem did not live through, but I was involved in a tangential way, which I'll explain to you later. It's a real place and a real time and a real event. I want to take you there. Now, I have no time machine to take you there, but I'd like to show you that in a certain way I do. And I'd like to, through tziyurim, through meditation, I'd like to take you, to really take you. I mean, I don't mean just intellectually. I'm not going to be there to tell you stories. The point is not to tell you stories. The point is to really get you into a very deep meditative state, or as deep as we can get, and to, through the help of Tziyurim, to travel to this place. I want you to experience 5 minutes. 5 minutes of one event. And I think that once you experience those 5 minutes of that event, now, the shiur will be more than 5 minutes, but we're going to be, you know, like, what's that movie, 24? Right?
Yeah.
So it's like an hour, but it's like, you know, it's really, the show is 30 minutes, but it's an hour, whatever. So what the event I want you to experience is basically 5 minutes, but it's going to take a long time to experience those 5 minutes because, again, my goal is not to tell stories. My goal is for you to experience the 5 minutes. And I think hopefully I'll show you that there's a tremendous tool that can really transform Ayahuasca in many different ways. Again, I'd like to just repeat the instructions we gave last time. Please come on time. And if you're late, please don't come. We're going to start exactly at 11:45. No food. Take your bath and food. Because any interruption will be incredibly disruptive. Because again, it needs a certain kind of groove. It needs a certain kind of continuity. That if there's people walking in and out and eating, it's not going to work as well. So that's the sham. I'd like to end now. But I just felt that without the introduction, I think that'd be totally lost. Okay, thank you so much.